We're holding on page Chof Gimel in Shabbos, three lines from the bottom, middle of Os Lamed Aleph. We're in the middle of the Gemara had talked about the idea that if a tzaddik fails to be moicha and people who are doing averus, even if he thinks they might not listen to him, as long as there's a chance that they might, then he gets blamed for it. And we have the whole story with Yechezkel, where originally Hashem planned to have the malachim mark the tzaddikim with a mark showing that they would live, and in the end Hashem changed his mind because the Midas Adin argued that manishtanu elu me'elu, that they weren't moicha when they should be. So we learned yesterday that we said that the Yechezkel describes there were six malachim coming, each one with a weapon of destruction in his hand, plus one more, which is Malach Gavriel, who is sort of giving them the orders. So Maninu Shisha Anoshim. So the Gemara asks, who are these six people? What do these six malachim represent? Amar Rav Chista, Ketzef Af V'Chema U'Mashchis U'Meshaber U'Mechala. Ketzef, Af, and Chema are various terms for Hashem's anger. Mashchis, Meshaber, and Machala are various terms for destruction and annihilating and whatever. So these six malachim represent those. Tosfos points out a question. There's a different Gemara that implies that Hashem doesn't have Chema against the Jewish people. And here we see that Chema was one of the six malachim. Plus, you have a Gemara in Nedarim that says that Moshe killed Chema. Although there, the Gemara says there are two Chemas, so there's another one as well. So there's some discussion about the identities of these malachim. Anyway, umayshna tov. Now we learned yesterday that when the pasuk says visa tov, that Hashem tells the malach Gavriel to mark a tov, which literally means a mark, but the Gemara is understanding that it means the letter tov on the foreheads of the people. And we said one of ink for the tzaddikim and one of blood for the rishoyim. So why dafka tov out of all the letters of the alphabet? Omarav tov tichya tov tomus. Because the tuf, respectively, the one of ink, which is for the tzaddikim, represents you will live. And the one in blood for the rishayim represents the opposite. So the tuf, in other words, for each one of them, represents the respective thing for them. Shmuel says the tuf represents the idea that the schus aves has ended. In other words, the tuf is the initial of the word tamo. So therefore, now Tosfos learns that. It's like this. Marsha explains that it also represents both of them. For the tzaddikim, it means the schus avos may be gone, but their own schus will save them. As opposed to the rishoyim, it means the schus of the avos is gone, and they have no schusim to save themselves. So therefore, they're gone. Now, on the other hand, Tosfos discusses the question that. If we're saying the schus of the avos has ended, and the Gemara is going to discuss that point soon, when exactly that took place in Jewish history, what about the we constantly mention the avos in davening? So first Tosfos answers, there's a difference between the schus of the avos and the bris with the avos. The schus of the avos, eventually the Jewish people used up, but the bris of the avos never gets used up, and therefore we mention that we mention that regularly in davening. Then, though, Tosfos brings another possibility is that the next one is going to be Rabbi Yochanan that says, on the contrary, the schus avos will stand up on their behalf. So unlike Marsha, who's saying that Tamos schus avos, that Shmuel's Tamos schus avos is referring to both the tzaddikim and the rishoyim, the Tosfos learns that actually, no, it means that they're not arguing. One is talking what the tuf of the tzaddikim represents, and the other one is talking what the tuf of the rishoyim represents. For the rishoyim, it represents the schus avos is gone. For the tzaddikim, the schus avos still exists. And based on that, Tosfos says is why we don't only mention bris avos in davening. We often mention schus avos as well. Because according to that explanation, the schus avos still exists for tzaddikim. Is it the same ois that Cain had? I don't know if necessarily. I don't know if there's any medrash that says that with Cain it was a tuf. You have the explanation that it was a horn on his forehead or a letter of Hashem's name, which a letter of Hashem's name, a pashtus, wouldn't be a tuf because none of the common names of Hashem have a tuf in them. So a pashtus not, but I don't know. It might be that there's some medrash out there that says that there is. Anyway, so those are the various possibilities as far as what Shmuel means about Tamas Schusavis. Rabbi Yochanan Tochan Schusavis. Rabbi Yochanan says the Toch stands for the Schus of the others will bring Rachmanis, will bring mercy for the people. So again, that can mean for the tzaddikim, the schus of the avos will still stand them in good stead. For the rishoyim, not. Whereas according to Tosfos, it can mean that according to both Marsha and Tosfos, it comes out that Rabbi Yochanan's tochen schus avos, it would mean for the tzaddikim yes, for the rishoyim no. So all the difference is Marsha says that either tamas schus avos or tochen schus avos, each one of them can work equally well for the tzaddikim or for the rishoyim. Whereas according to Tosfos, one's referring to the tzaddikim and the other is referring to the tamas schus avos is for the rishoyim and the tochen schus avos is for the tzaddikim. Rish Lakish says another reason, a tof is the last letter of the seal of Hashem. The seal of Hashem is the word emes. So therefore, and the last letter of that is the letter tof. So therefore, that was the symbol to be put on the people's foreheads. Rashi, by the way, explains why is the seal of Hashem emes? Because you have the expression, ani rishon, ani achron, v'ani hu. Reb Nissen going on the side of the Gemara brings it slightly differently, that Hashem says that I rishon v'ani achron, and I'm never giving away my kingship to anybody else. So therefore, Hashem's seal is made up of the first, middle, and last letters of the aliphs, which are the letters emes. There's different places where it talks about there are remozim to that. For example, the beginning of the Torah begins Bereshis Bara Elikim, which is Sofer Tevis Emes, and the end of it is Asher Bara Elikim La'asois, which is also Sofer Tevis Emes. So you have this idea, as the Gemara mentions in other places as well, that Hashem's seal is truth, and therefore the Tov is chosen because of that. Which again, Marsha says, the idea would be, in other words, that for the tzaddikim, it would mean so it would mean that this is the end of the Gzeira. So for the tzaddikim, this is the final Gzeira, and they will survive, at least until the Midas Adin decide to convince Hashem otherwise. And then for the Rishoyim, it's also the final judgment, and that's that, they're goners. Omar of Shmuel ben Achmeni would mean he's saying a new statement. Of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omar would mean he's arguing with the previous ones. Elu b'nei Adam shekimu as haTorah kula me'alef ad tof. The tof is meant to represent the tzaddikim who kept the entire Torah from aleph to tof. So therefore, that's why they're marked with a tof. And vice versa, Marsha says the tof for the Rishoyim represents that they violated the whole Torah from aleph to tof. So those are all the various reasons why Hashem chose the letter Tof for this marking. Next, Me'emes Tamas Chus Avos. Now, Shmuel is saying that the Tof represents Tamas Chus Avos, that the Chus of the Avos has ended. It's been used up. So when in Jewish history did that happen? Omer Rav Mimos Hoshea Ben Be'er. Now, again, according to Tosfos' first explanation, it's gone for everyone. All that's left is the bris with the others. According to Tosfos' second explanation, it still exists for the tzaddikim. It's just gone for the rishon. So when did this happen? Omer Rav Mimos Hoshea ben Be'er. From the time of the Navi Hoshea, the first one of the Terei Aser, Shenemar, he warns, it's Naftorah, Parshas Dvarim, Hashem says, I will expose her humiliation in the eyes of her lovers. So you have the Pasuk is comparing the Jewish people, as it often does, to a married woman who's being mezaneh with other people. So now Hashem is saying, I'll expose her degradation in their eyes. They'll see how degraded and lowly she is. The ish in front of all those goyim that she thought are her good friends. The ish lo yatzilenu miyadi, and no man will save her from my hand. Meaning, in other words, there's nothing left of the schus of the others that could save them, that they won't have to go through that. That's how Rashi explains. Marsha says also another way of understanding is because it says va'ata, Hashem is saying now I will expose her humiliation. Meaning, up until then, Hashem is saying I was willing to be patient because of schus avos, but now that schus avos is gone, then that's it. Now it's going to happen. So in the time of Hashem, Ushmul amim mechazor. Shmuel says it was about a generation or two earlier in the times of Chazor. Chazor was a king of Aram, and the pasuk says, "Shenem of Chazor, Melech Aram, Lochatz Tisro Kol Yemei Yehoyachaz." he was oppressing the Jewish people and conquering territory from them and whatever, as it describes in the Psukim, throughout all the times of Jehoiachaz, who was one of the kings of Yisrael. Uchtiv, and the next pasuk continues, Vayochan Hashem oisim vayirachamim. Hashem was kind to the Jewish people and he had rachmanus on them. Vayifan aleim, and he turned to them, Laman briseis Avraham Yitzchok v'Yaakov, for the sake of his covenant with Avraham Yitzchok v'Yaakov, v'loy ova hashchisam. So Hashem did not want to destroy them, v'loy shlicham v'apon of ad ota, and he didn't throw them out from his presence until now. So implying until now, yes, but after that, the schus of us is gone, and therefore, so Rashi actually uses the expression that Hashem isn't turning anymore to the bris of us, which goes against what Tosfos is saying, that the bris of us continues to exist. So evidently, Rashi understands that even the bris of us, there came a point when Hashem is not paying attention to it anymore, at least in terms of that, therefore, it's going to save the Jewish people from punishment. So therefore, the psukim go on to explain, in other words, that in practice, what happened was that Hashem caused the next king of Yisrael, Jehoiachaz's son, by the name of Jehoiash, was a successful general, and he beat the Aramim several times and saved the Jewish people from their depredations. But we see, in other words, that it's saying ad ota, only until now. Rabbi Yishur ben Levi, Amar Mimei Eliyahu. Rabbi Yishur ben Levi says it was even earlier in the times of Eliyahu HaNavi, which is another couple of generations before Chazaril and Jehoiachaz. Shenema Vayhi Baal, you have in the story when Eliyahu with showdown on Har HaKamel against the Nevi'a Baal, Vayhi Baal Loisa Mincha, at the time when they were offering the Mincha in the Bais HaMikdash, Vayigash Eliyahu HaNavi Vayomer, Eliyahu HaNavi approached, and he says, Hashem Elokei Avraham Yitzchak Yisrael, Hayoyim Yivod Avagomer, today let there be shown to the Jewish people that you are Hashem and you run the world and make the fire descend on the Mizbeach. So in other words, and he mentions the Kei Avraham Yitzchak Yisrael, and he's saying, Hayoyim, today make it known, implying that this is it. After today, it's not going to be able to happen anymore. Now, what about then Rashi says, so how would Rabbi Yishur ben Levi understand the pasuk with Chazoel? And the answer is that there was special rachamim that the Jewish people davened. This is special. The pasuk, in fact, says about Jehoiachaz himself that he begged Hashem for help, and therefore Hashem had special rachmanos as a one-off, as one more time, even though already according to Rabbi Yishur ben Levi, the schus of us had already expired in the times of Eliyahu HaNavi. Rabbi Yochanan says the schus of the obis expired in the times of Chizkiyahu, which is after all of these other times that we're talking about. The Navi Hosea was one of the Nevi'im in the times of Yeshaya. Later on in his times, he started his Nevuah a couple of kings before Chizkiyahu, and he's still saying Nevuah in Chizkiyahu's time. So now Chizkiyahu was like the end of that period. Shenemar. The pasuk says, "Lamarbe hamisra, to increase the government, or l'sholem ein kates, and there will be no end of peace. Al kisei David v'amamlachtoi, on David's throne and on his kingdom, l'hochin oisa, to make it firmly established, or l'sada, and to support it, the mishpat of tzedakah, with justice and tzedakah, me'at avad olam, from now on forever, kinas Hashem tzvokes, tasa zois v'gever, the zealousness of Hashem on behalf of the Jewish people will accomplish this." So what does that mean? In other words, the pasuk is saying, in other words, that Malchus Beis David will continue to exist no matter what, but in some form. But in other words, the point is that we're saying the zealousness of Hashem will continue to do this from now on, not the schus avos, implying that the schus avos is gone by that point. Marsha points out another point of it is also the fact that it says that Hashem will support it, the mishpat of its tzedakah, rather than saying that it will be in the schus of the avos, implying that the schus of the avos is gone. Okay, so now that we talked about the idea that you have tzaddikim of Yechezkel's times were punished because they weren't moicha, so let's get into the more general question of what causes it that tzaddikim die in an untimely time, or that they suffer yisurim. So Amar Rav Ami, ein misa b'loy chet v'el ein yisurim b'loy avim. There's no death without sin, and there's no yisurin without oven. Chet means an inadvertent avera, and oven means a deliberate avera. Meaning, in other words, so Tosfos explains. First of all, Tosfos explains that we're talking about when we say over here yisurim that are the result of oven, which is a deliberate avera. Specifically, Tosfos says we're talking about ugly kinds of yisurim. For example, the Gemara is going to make a pasuk about negoyim, meaning tzaras and things like that. So Maharsha says that's the vort also because those yisurim are so ugly and so disfiguring in a way they're worse than death. Therefore, they deserve to be for avon, whereas death can be just for chet, for an inadvertent aveir. Maharsha brings up the point. What about Eov? He had terrible disfiguring yisurim, and you can't really say that he was amazed. He was after the pasuk, after all, describes him as yirei alekim v'soremera. So Abbas Eson on the side over here points out that you do have the opinion in the Medrash that we're going to have it it's in the Gemara in Sota that Eov was one of Paro's three advisors, and when Paro was trying to figure out what to do with the Jewish people, and Eov was quiet. So on his level, that was considered a serious avera, and therefore he was struck with these diseases and plagues and whatnot. On the other hand, he goes on to say, the fact is that the Gemara does mention in Bava Basra many different opinions when Eov lived, among them that he lived as late as the time of Golus Bavel, that he was with the Gemara says over there, he was one of the Ole Bavel, one of the Jews who came back from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. So according to that, then obviously he wasn't one of Paro's advisors 1,000 years earlier. And in that case, then you could very well say that as the Gemara is going to end off saying that yesh yisurin b'loy oven, that it could be a person suffers yisurin, even without an Aveira that would justify it. Anyway, so ein misa b'loy chet. So Rav Ami says there's no death without a chet, without at least an inadvertent aveira. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, a nefesh achotes he tomas v'gomer, the soul that sins that will die, implying that without sin, without a chet, then there's no death. Ein yisurin b'loy oven, and there's no yisurin without a deliberate aveira. Dichtiv, for kadti b'shevet pisham, Hashem says in the context of talking about malchus based David, but here Rav Ami is understanding that it applies more generally. I will punish the pshoyim, the rebellious aveiras, with a shevet, with a rod, with a staff, over negoyim avoinim, and I'll punish the avoinus with negoyim, with saras and things like that. So therefore, we see that those can only happen with oven. So both the shevet and the negoyim refer to yisurim. So the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction though. A Braisa says, Omru malachi ashoris lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the malachim asked Hashem, Ribono shel Olam, mipnei ma konasta misal Adam Rishon, why did you penalize Adam Rishon with death? In other words, Eitz Yosef points out the question is, that still Hashem had made him the question was rather that look, he's a human being, eventually isn't he gonna have to die anyway? So therefore why did you say as though like death only came about because of the Eitz Hadas when it would have come out otherwise? And the answer is, and Hashem is gonna answer, because of the Chet Eitz Hadas, meaning had it not been for that, then Hashem would have overridden the Teva. There's also another point that Mephoshim make, that the Malachim are asking. Anaf Yosef points out, why is it? I mean, Adam did tremendous tshuva afterwards. Why didn't Hashem accept that tshuva to the extent of rescinding the penalty? So Omer Lahem mitzvah kalat tzivisi, but over alas, Hashem tells him, I gave him such an easy mitzvah to stay away from the Eitz Hadas for 3 hours, but over alas, and he transgressed it. So therefore, according to Eitz Yosef, then the point is, so therefore I left things the way they are naturally. Naturally, a human being who's made up of different elements is going to eventually break down and decompose into those elements. So therefore, that means he's going to die. Had he not eaten from the Eitz Hadas, I would have overridden that. But because he did, then I'm not going to. Or according to Anaf Yosef, the vote is very nice. He did tshuva. But the fact is, that was the only mitzvah that existed in the world at that point. So when he transgressed it, it had a much, much greater effect than you have later on when an individual person does an aveira. And meanwhile, you have lots of other people out there who are doing mitzvahs. Anyway, Omrule, so the Braisa continues that the Malachim say to Hashem, Vale Moshe v'Aaron Jekimu Kol HaTorah Kula. So what about Moshe and Aaron? They kept the entire Torah, Vumesu, and they still died. So obviously it's not a matter of an Aveda Kala, of a Mitzvah Kala. Omrulehem, so Hashem answers them with the Loshan Apostle from Kehelis, Mikra Echa, La Tzadik v'La Rosha. The same kind of thing happens to the Tzadik and to the Rosha. La Tov v'Gomer, and the Apostle continues, for the good and for the Torah and for the Tomei. In context, actually, that pasuk is saying that people see that kind of thing happening in the world and causes them to question Hashem and to think that they don't, that they're, why bother doing mitzvahs if everybody's going to end up the same way anyway? And then Shlomo is explaining, don't think that way, but Hashem is using that pasuk over here to say, that's the way it is. I run the world. I know. And even you, Malachim, can't understand it. Rashi on the Pasuk, by the way, brings over there from the Medrash, but you have a bunch of oppositions in the Pasuk over there. La tzadik v'la rosha, la tov v'la tohor v'la tome, la zeveach, la sher nenu zeveach. And Rashi explains over there how you can find in Jewish history pairs where you have a tzadik and a rosha, where even though one was a tzadik and one was a rosha, and even though, for example, one was careful with a certain mitzvah and the other one violated it with impunity, nevertheless, they both had the same kind of thing happen. Them. So therefore, as Shlomo goes on to say, that causes people to have questions in emunah. Anyway, as Hashem is saying, that's how it is. Anyway, the point is that we see from this braisa that in fact we can't attribute Moshe and Aaron's deaths to any kind of avera. Hashem is saying that's just the way it is. I'm the one who makes the decisions. So what is Reb Ami telling us? Ein misa b'lechet? The answer is huda amaki haytanim. The answer is fine, but Reb Ami is following a different Tana. He's an Amor. He can't argue with a Braisa. But if he finds another Braisa that supports his view, then he can go with that. The Tanya, we learn in another Braisa. Reb Shimon Alaza Omer, Af Moshe V'Aaron B'Cheta Mesu. As a matter of fact, Moshe and Aaron did also die for their Avera. Shenema Yan Lohan Mantami V'Goyim, as it says, when they hit the rock by May Meriva over there, by Kodesh, where Hashem says, because you didn't trust in me, implying, Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, Ha Hem Mantami, implying that if you had trusted in me, Adayin Le'Yiz Manchem Le'Potim in Olam, then it wouldn't have yet been your time to pass away from the world. So therefore, we can say it was very bedakos, the Avera that they did was very bedakos, but nevertheless, on their level, it was an Avera, and therefore we can say that in fact they did die with chet. So Marsha explains that. Now, what about how would Reb Ami understand it? How would the previous Braisa rather understand it, that says that Moshe and Aaron didn't have a chet? What do they do with this pasuk? They would say, rather, because loyhem mantem, therefore, as the pasuk continues, you're not going to get to bring them into Eretz Yisrael. If you had been Hamantim B, you would have been able to bring them into Eretz Yisrael. But it has nothing to do with their deaths per se. And with their deaths, so just because Hashem decided that that's how it has to be. The fact that they didn't get to lead the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael is a consequence of hitting the rock instead of speaking to it, according to that mandam. So the point is, Reb Shimon Elazar is saying that Moshe and Aaron did have a chet, and therefore Reb Ami can be following that and say, ein misa b'lo chet. Okay, the Gemara says, Mesmi, I have a contradiction, then another contradiction against Reb Ami. A Braisa says, Dalad Mesu be'etia shel nachash. There were four people who passed away only because of etioi of the snake. Rashi explains that etioi comes from an Aramaic word that means an etza, that means an advice. So only because of the advice that the snake gave Chava, only because of that did these people pass away. They had no averus of their own. Marsha brings from the Oruch another meaning that it's related to the word eight, as in a pen. So in other words, because Hashem wrote down as a result of the Chet Etzadas that everybody has to die, and therefore these four that we're going to mention were caught up in that as well, but not that they had any Avedas of their own that would explain why they died. And the four are Ve'eluhin, Binyamin ben Yaakov, Ve'amram Avi Moshe, Ve'yishai Avi David, Ve'kilov ben David. In the Gemara, by the way, Rabbi Akiva Eger brings on the side a couple of other sources, Zohar and some other ones that mention a couple of others. The Zohar mentions also Yeshua. There's a different source. I don't remember if it's also a Zohar or if it's someplace else, where he mentions that Levi, the Levi, the son of Yaakov, is also in that category. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Bakulu Gemara." Now, all of those, how do we know that they passed away only because of Etia Shomachash? We have that only the Kabbalah with most of them. With the exception of Yishai, the father of David, where we have a pasuk that expresses this point clearly. Dichtiv, yeah, the pasuk says during Avshalom's revolt. So David has his general Yoav, who was a nephew of his. Avshalom needs a general as well. So the pasuk says, "V'asamasa some Avshalom tachas Yoav alatzava." Avshalom appointed Amasa, who was also a nephew of David's, by the way, over the army. Who is Amasa? V'amasa ben Ishu Shmo Yisra Yisraeli. Amasa is the son of a man by the name of Yisra Yisraeli. In a different pasuk, by the way, it calls him Yisra Yishmaeli. So some before Shem explained that he was a Yid who lived in the lands of Yishmael. Others say that others learn that he was a Ger. There's a Gemara in Yevamos also that takes it in the sense that he acted like Yishmaeli, putting on a sword and threatening anybody who would deny the din of Mayavi v'loy Mayavos. Anyway, so this Yisraeli Asher Bo Alavigayo Bas Nochash Achos Tzruya, who had relations with Avigayo, the daughter of Nochash, the sister of Tzruya. Mephoshim say that Ba'el implies that he had relations with her. He didn't marry her. He just had relations with her. It's like a Pelegish or something. Anyway, the point is that so the Achos Tzruya Eim Yoyov. So this Abigail was, this is not, by the way, the same Abigail who was David's wife. This is a sister of his whose name was also Abigail, who is the daughter of Nochash and is the sister of Tzruya, who in turn Tzruya is the mother of Yoyov. So in other words, in short, Amasa and Yoyav are cousins. Their mothers, Abigail and Tzruya, were sisters. So the question is, what do you mean? This Abigail was not the daughter of Nochash. She was the daughter of Yishai. In Divrei Hayomim, when it talks about David's family, it lists all the sons, and then it says their sisters with Tzruya and Abigail. So therefore, Abigail's father is Yishai. Now, on a poshita level, Mephoshim explained, okay, it may mean that David's mother was previously married to somebody else, and she had a daughter with him. But the Gemara is assuming that all the children were from the same parents. So Ella Basmi Shemes Be'etish on Nochash. So rather, the pasuk is hinting that she's the daughter of someone Yishai who died only because of Etish on Nochash, only because of the snake, and therefore he's called Nochash in this pasuk. So we have a hint in the pasuk about him, unlike with the other three. Anyway, the point is that we see in this braisa that there are people who don't have averus and die anyway. Now Tosfa says, what would this braisa do with the pasuk that says Odom ein tzadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo? So Tosfa says, okay, that would be talking about most people. You have these rare exceptions. And then also now there's another part printed in Tosfos, which that actually is not, that you don't find that in the standard Tosfos and Shas. However, Maor Shav brings it over here. What do you mean? Are Yishai and Kilov and so forth, are they greater than Moshe and Aaron? And the answer is they're not greater, but they're not as great. But the fact is they didn't do any chet, whereas Moshe and Aaron did. Moshe and Aaron are much greater in level, but they also committed some kind of chet, whereas these four that we're mentioning did not. Anyway, so you have to ask, the Gemara says, Mani. Now, who would this braisa be like? That it's listing four tzaddikim, none of whom are Moshe and Aaron. Ilema Tana de Malach HaSharis, would you say that it's the same Tana as the braisa where the Malach HaSharis are asking Hashem, why did Moshe and Aaron have to die? Can't be Baloi to Moshe Aaron. Then in that case, there shouldn't be a list of just four. Moshe and Aaron should be on this list as well, because the Malachim are saying they didn't do any averus, and Hashem is saying, you're right, but this is how I run the world. Ella Lav Reb Shimon Elazar. Evidently, this last braisa about the Et Yishol Nachash must be according to Reb Shimon Elazar. Ushma mina yesh misa b'loy chepe yesh yisurin b'loy oven. And you see from that that there is misa without chet, and you see there is yisurin without oven. True, actually, Tosfos says the fact is we didn't slug up the part about Yisurin. We didn't have anything in this braisa about Yisurin. But the point is, we do see that even this braisa holds that you do have those four examples of Misa Boichet, and the braisa of the Malach HaSharis would add even more. You'd have Moshe and Aaron and well, or Tiyuvta de Ravami. So therefore, it's a clear contradiction against Ravami. And the Gemara says, you're right, Tiyuvta, it is a contradiction, and therefore there can, in fact, very rarely be Misa without Chet and Yisurin without Ovid. Having talked about then people who did Averus who didn't do Averus, so now let's talk about, now from here until almost the end of the parak, the Gemara is going to deal with a number, actually pretty much till the end of the parak, the Gemara is going to deal with various people mentioned in Tanakh where it seems from the way it's written in Tanakh that they did terrible Averus, and we're going to explain that in fact they did not. What they did was much less severe. So the first one of them, Amr Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr Rabbi Yonasan, Kola Omer Ruven Chota Eina Elatoya. Anybody who says that Reuven sinned in the blatant way that it says in the pasuk, namely the pasuk says that Reuven went by Yishkavas Bila Pilegesh Aviv, that he had relations with Bila, his father's Pilegesh, which would be outright also, she's his father's wife. So anybody who thinks that Reuven did that actual Avera is making a mistake. Shenema, because the pasuk is by Yehu b'nei Yaakov Shneimaser. Right after that, the pasuk says the sons of Yaakov were 12. Melamed sheshkulim kachod, teaching us that they're all on the same level. In other words, Marsha explains, you have actually like this. You actually, if you look in Chumashim, you'll find that there's actually two different sets of Torah on the first half of the pasuk over there. The pasuk goes, "Vayhi b'shkoyn Yisrael ba'aretz ahi," when Yisrael, which is Yaakov, was dwelling in that land on the way, when he's still on his way back to Hebron to reunite with Yitzchak. Reuven went and lay with Bilah, the Pelegesh of his father. Vayishma Yisrael, and Yisrael heard. And then the pasuk continues, Vayu b'nei Yaakov shneim also. The sons of Yaakov were 12. So now, you actually, if you look in Chumashim, you'll find there are two sets of Torah on the first half of that pasuk. The way we have it and the way we lay it in Shul, we read it all as one long pasuk, and there's a piska be'emtza pasuk. There's this rare thing where you have a break of Parashas Stuma in the Sefer Torah in the middle of the pasuk, which Maharsha says, that's the point, in other words, that the fact that that Vayu b'nei Yaakov, Shnei Moser, is not placed in a separate pasuk is meant to show that even though we're saying such a degrading thing that Reuven did, nevertheless, in that same pasuk, Vayu b'nei Yaakov, Shnei Moser, the same way as the other brothers are not guilty of any such thing, neither is Reuven of the actual blatant thing that it says in the pasuk, but rather something more doctrinal. So therefore, it's all written in one pasuk, but therefore you have that piska be'emtza pasuk to represent that break in thought. So you do have the other system of truck that's printed over there, and the Chumashim actually does make them two separate pesukim. The Gemara is going to discuss further on whether, in fact, we can say that maybe Reuven did do the Aveira, but then did serious tshuva for it, or whether to begin with he didn't. So that might depend on the two different sets of truck. Or the other way around, two different sets of Torah might depend which of those opinions. Anyway, teaching us that they're all identical. They all weigh equally to each one. All of them are equal in Sidkus. So what does the pasuk mean that he lay with Bila, his father's pelagish? This teaches us that he confused his father's bed. He moved his father's bed when he wasn't supposed to. Umala, all of our kosev kila shochav in Bila. The pasuk considers that as serious as if he had relations with Bila. Now, what's going on? How does moving a bed equate to having relations with her? So there's a lot of different explanations. Maharsha gives one of them, which is that. So what's going on? The Gemara is going to say soon that Reuven took the view like this. He said, as long as Rachel was alive, fine, I can understand. She's Yaakov's favorite wife. Therefore, he spends more time with her, and therefore he regularly has his bed in her tent. Now that she passed away, and now Bilhah is going to take over, is it right? It's one thing, Rachel is Leah's sister, but Bilhah is only a Pilegish, even if she is their sister. She's only a sister from one of Laban's Pilegishim. So is it right that she should be that she should be the rival to my mother, Leah, and therefore he took matters into his own hands? So now, Maharsha explains that Reuven took the view. So now, what is it? Yaakov married Bilhah and Zilpah. Meaning they started out as shvachos, and as shvachos, as maidservants, Yaakov would have been also to marry them. But then he freed them at Rachel and Leah's bidding, respectively, and they became fully free women, and now Yaakov could marry them. Reuven makes a mistake. He takes the view that they weren't actually freed. So therefore, he considers them still shvachas. For that reason, we find later on that it says that they called the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. It says the brothers called them avodim, because if they thought like Reuven did that the mothers haven't been emancipated, then the children are still considered avodim. So he figures, if Bilhah is still a shivcha, she's not really my father's wife. Kiddushin are not teufas in her. So the pasuk considers as though he had relations with her, because taking his logic to its logical conclusion, he would have been able to marry her. He would have been able to have relations with her because she's anyway not Yaakov's legitimate wife. So therefore, the pasuk can consider it, because he started this train of thought, as though he took it to his logical conclusion. So that's one explanation. There's a couple of others. There's an explanation, for example, that the Ramah gives, that the Chidah brings it over here on the Gemara, that uh, That what Reuven did is when he knew that Yaakov is together with Bilhah and they're going to have relations, he started walking around very noisily outside. So that meant Yaakov is not going to have relations when there's somebody else within earshot. So therefore that held him back. And therefore the pasuk is treating it. He interfered in Yaakov's marital relations. And therefore the pasuk considers it as though he himself did that. Yaakov mentioned another possibility as well. What Reuven did is he made sure at one point to be in yichud with Bilhah, where then conceivably there could be the chashash that he did have relations with her. La halacha, the halacha is that a man is not obligated to divorce his wife on such a suspicion, but a baal nefesh, it says, a baal nefesh, it's brought in halacha, the Ran brings it at the end of Nidonim, should be choshish to him. Yaakov, being a baal nefesh, would. So therefore, in effect, Reuven, forever after, made that Yaakov is not going to remain married to and have relations with Bilhah. And therefore, again, we can consider it as though he himself interfered and had relations with. So the Gemara continues. Tani Rav Shimon Elazar Omer Mutzal Oise Tzadik Ma Oise Oven. That Tzadik Reuven is saved from that avera. In other words, he most certainly did not do that avera. V'loy Bam Maisa Zeliyode. He did not do such a maisa as having relations with his father's wife. And we know that, says Rav Shimon Elazar, because Efsha Osid Zare Lamed Al Hevel. How could it possibly be that in the future his descendants, Shevet Reuven, are going to stand by the Brachas and Klolos on Har Evel? The Pasuk mentions the six Shvatim that stood on Har Grizim and the six on Har Evel, and one of the six on Har Evel is Reuven. The Loimar, and they're going to say, they're going to announce, Oru Shoichavim Eshasavim, cursed is the one who lies with his father's wife, the Yavich Chetzel Yoda, and Hashem would make it possible for this Chet to come to his hand. In other words, So Rashi explains, Hashem wouldn't have arranged that his descendants should be among the Mekalim if he was guilty of such an Aveira. Marsha says the other way around, since Hashem had decided in advance that his descendants are going to be among the Mekalim, therefore Hashem would not make it possible for him to do such a chet. Now, Marsha says, okay, Rashi may not like that explanation, because I call B'deh Shemayim, Chutz Miyeres Shemayim, but that is a way of explaining the Rav Shimon Elazar's wording. So what happened over here? Elben imay tova. What happened was Reuven wanted to do something because of the insult to his mother. Omar, he says, ima chois imi, hoset tsara leimi. Granted, my mother's sister, Rachel, could be a rival to my mother, at least they're sisters. Shifchasa chois imi teit tsara leimi. Should the maidservant of my mother's sister be her rival now that Rachel has passed away? Omar, the bilbos matzah. So therefore, he went and confused the bed and moved it in order that Yaakov shouldn't have relations with her. Acherim oimrim. Acherim, which usually means Reb Meir, says, Shtei Matzoris Bilbo. Actually, what he did is he moved two beds, Achas Shol Shechina v'Achas Shol Ovid, one of the Shechina and one Yaakov's own bed. So Rashi explains that Yaakov, in each one of the four tents, so each of the Rachel and Leah and Bilhah and Zilpah, each one of them had their own tent, as we find, for example, when Lavan went searching for his Tzrafim. So each one had their own tent. In each tent, besides his own bed, Yaakov also had a bed reserved for the Shechina. So he would see whichever one he saw the Shechina was on that bed, was so to speak, resting on that bed, then he would come into that tent and have relations with that one. So Reuven was saying moved both of those beds. Behind the that's what the pasuk says when Yaakov criticizes him for it in Parshas Vayechi. He says, Oz chilalto yitzui ola. Then you desecrated my bed that went up. So in other words, the Shechina, which goes up on the bed, because you have in parenthesis over here, Altikri Yitzui Eli Yitzu I, don't read Yitzui, which would be in the singular one bed, but Yitzu I in the plural, which means two beds. But Rashi seems to have not had that girsa, because Rashi has two other explanations how the Gemara gets that there were how Acherim say that there were two beds. One is because it says Oz Chilalti Yitzui Ola, which means he who came up on my bed, which is the Shechina, then you caused that to move away, as opposed to if it meant that Reuven himself went up onto the bed, then the expression would have been Alisa. And the second point is because the Shechina was in the tents of Tzadikim until the Mishkan was built. So therefore, we can assume that there was a bed for the Shechina over there. Marsha points out another way we can learn it, because it says Mishkevei Avicha. It says the beds in plural of your father. Now, Reuven has two fathers. He has a human father, Yaakov, and he has Avinu Shebashamayim, which is Hashem. And therefore, the implication is that he moved both of those beds. So the Gemara says Ketanoi. This whole thing is like a machloikas tanoim of what exactly Reuven did or didn't do. When the Pasuk says, Yaakov says to Yaakov criticizes Reuven, and he says, Pachas Kamayim al Toisar, unstable, hasty, the word Pachas means like rushing quickly, like water, al Toisar, because of that, you're not going to have greatness. As Rashi explains on the Pasuk over there, Reuven should have had Kahuna and Malchus, and he lost all of that. So what's the word Pachas? Now, Marsha explained, the point is, if it just meant that he's telling Reuven, you were too hasty, then the word should be Pachas Ta. You were pachas. Instead, pachas is like an infinitive. It's not speaking to any particular person. Therefore, the Gemara is going to understand. Therefore, the various tanoim are going to understand that as an acronym for what happened over here, for the various stages of what Reuven went through. So, Rabbi Lazar Omer pazta. Rabbi Lazar says it means you were hasty. The word pazta is related to the word pziza, which is an Aramaic word that means hasty. Chavta, you were guilty. Zalta, and you treated your father disrespectfully. So in other words, according to Rabbi Lazar, it means that actually he learns differently than what we've been saying until now. That Reuven actually was chota with this. He learns that there pazda, you were too quick, and you were over on two things. Chavda, you were over on the issue of Eshes Ish, and Zalta, and you treated your father disrespectfully by violating the issue of Eshes Av. So according to Rabbi Lazar, it would come out that Reuven actually did do this Havera, just that afterwards he did Tshuva and Hashem accepted his Tshuva. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Chosata al-Dos, similarly Rabbi Yeshua understands the word Pachas as an acronym. The Pei stands for Chosata al-Dos, you overstepped the laws of the Torah, which Marsha explains. In other words, even though technically you were Ben Noach, and a Ben Noach is mutter and his father's wife, but nevertheless, you were over on the laws of the Torah, which you know the Torah in the future is going to answer that. Chatasa, you sinned. Zanisa, and you committed Znus. So again, according to Rabbi Yeshua, it means that he actually committed Znus. Rem Gamliel, on the other hand, understands differently. Pilauta, you davened to be saved from the Avera. Chalta, you begged Hashem, like Vayechal Moshe, Zorcha Tfila Secha, and your Tfila shone, and your Tfila was accepted, that Hashem saved you from doing such a serious avein. In other words, Rabbi Gamliel is learning that Reuven maybe intended to do such an avera, but he didn't actually carry it out. He davened to Hashem and pleaded with Hashem to strengthen him that he shouldn't, and he was successful. However, Rav Gamliel says, even so, we still need the explanation from the Mudoi, which is Rav Lazar HaMudoi. Because Marsha explains, because after all, Rav Gamliel's explanation, the Pilalta, you could also understand it to mean that he did do the Aveda, but then he davened to Hashem to forgive him. So rather, we need Rav Lazar HaMudoi's explanation, which makes it clear that he didn't actually do the Aveda. So Rav Lazar HaMudoi says, Hapfeichas Ateva V'dosha, turn around, flip around the word, Pachas, and Darshan it that way, and then you'll have Ziyazata, you trembled, you were afraid to do the Avera, Hirtata, you withdrew, like you shrank back from the Avera, Porcha Chet Mimcha, and the Chet flew away from you. In other words, according to Rav Lazar HaMudoi, also, he didn't actually do the Avera. So a different explanation of Zizata is not to tremble in fear of doing the Aveda, but rather actually Eitz Yosef says it can also mean that it means your Yetzahara was making you tremble and making you move towards the Aveda, and you were about to, but Hirtata, but you shrank back from it and didn't actually do the Aveda, and Percha, Chet Mimcha, and it flew away from you, didn't actually do the Aveda. The Gemara continues, Rava Amar va'amila Rabbi Yirmi va'amar, another explanation, also flipping around the word, like Rabbi Lazar HaMudoi says, you can also darshan it, Zacharta Oncha Shaldara, the Zion stands for you remembered the punishment for doing such a thing, Chilisa Atzma Chacholi Gadol, you made yourself sick with a tremendous sickness by holding back your Yetzahara, Perashta Milachtoi, and you held yourself back from doing the Avera. So according to this drasha also, like we started saying, Whereas again, according to Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua, it would come out that Reuven did in fact do the Avera of having relations with Bila, but that afterwards he did Tshuva and Hashem accepted his Tshuva. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula. Hey Nissen. The pasuk describes the slavery in Mitzrayim. They embittered their lives with hard labor, with mortar and with bricks. Asher Avdu Ba'am B'Farach, they made them work with crushing labor. Now, on a deeper level, you have part of this explanation. There's in the Zayah that Vayimoros Chayim, they embittered their lives, refers to the Torah. The Torah is Kihem Chayenu. Ba'avoda Kosha, the Zayah says, refers to Kashis. B'choymer refers to Kal B'choymer, or B'chol Avoyde B'asada, all kinds of work in the field, refers to Brises, because Brises are outside, just like a field. And B'levenim is Libun Halachas, is clarifying and whitening and clarifying the Halachas. So we learn from that, the Rebbe says in a Sikha and look at Chelik Yud Gimel, that you're able to really to transform and to swap out all the difficulties of Golus, all the troubles of Parnasa, all the worries and everything, and you're able to swap them out really for Ruchniyistik thing. When a person throws himself into learning Torah, B'iyun, with Yigiyah, with tremendous effort and diligence and Asmada, then that way he's Yotze, all the difficulties of Golus that he would have otherwise had to have, and then he's Zoicha to a personal Ge'ula and a Ruchniyistik Ge'ula, which eventually brings the general Gashmiyistik Ge'ula for the whole Jewish people. Halacha, continuing on the halachas of fragrances. If you mix oil or water, if you perfume oil or water with spices, so then depending what kind of spices was, then you would say Boda Atza B'Samim or Isve B'Samim as the case maybe. You wouldn't say, in other words, because it's diluted in water, then you would say Mina B'Samim, you say the appropriate bracha, which is why, for example, the rose water that they have in Sfardish and Shoals, you would still say on it Atza B'Samim or Isve B'Samim as the case maybe. If it's a mixture, then it's Boda Mina B'Samim. In the same way, anytime you have a mixture of different things, then it's Boda Mina B'Samim. Although the Alter Rebbe says if you could separate them, then you'd have to make a bracha separately on each one. Now, what happens if you perfume the water or the oil, and then afterwards you strained out the spices? So you still have the fragrance in the water or in the oil, but you don't have the actual spices in them anymore. There you have a suffix because you don't have the actual spices in them. So therefore, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't smell that because of the suffix bracha. The Alter Rebbe says you would say Bomin B'Samim on such a concoction. I'm going to